And right now, I am extremely pleased to say we are joined by an MLB Network host, a play-by-play announcer, a 28-time Emmy Award winner. 28 times. Recipient of the Ford C. Frick Award for major contributions to baseball. A primetime host for 11 Olympic Games. Somebody I consider a very good friend of the program. Of course, that is Bob Costas. Bob, it is so good to have you back. Let me start off by asking, Bob, how are you and everybody around you doing during this very unusual time?
We're fortunate to say, Romy, that we're all fine. We're healthy. We're well situated. Just waiting it out like everybody else and doing what we can. You're able to be on the air all the time. And even though, as you may know, I'm a notorious technophobe, I figured out the Zoom and the Skype and everything else, so I'm able to be on MLBN or anybody else that asks me. I shouldn't put it that way. Everybody will start asking me. Those who ask me, and it seems worthwhile to do, I'm able to do it.
I knew you would figure that stuff out, Bob. Bob Costas is joining us. I did not have a concern about that for even a moment. Listen, Bob, you've been around sports for decades. What then, even with this technology, what's it been like for you to be without sports for the last couple of months?
I think the fact that I have been around it for decades, Romy, makes it easier for me to deal with it, if that's the right way to put it. Do I hope for sports to be able to return safely and sensibly soon? Of course I do. But I'm not out on a ledge with nothing else to do. Actually, if you look at it the right way, this is an opportunity to do some things you otherwise might not have done. All those books on the shelf that you've been meaning to read, well, I've gotten to a lot of them. The old movies that you never saw or the ones you'd like to see again, this is the opportunity to do it, you know, to exercise more regularly than you do when you're busy, to eat a little more healthy. I was talking to Joe Maddon yesterday. Joe has gone from 208 pounds down to 193 because he's not eating out as much as he used to. I mean, Joe is a real foodie, and he loves his wine. But the upside of this situation for him, at least, is that he's gotten into much better shape. And he's been able, as he put it, to think about some things, including about the composition of his Angels roster and how he will approach this set of circumstances when they play, if they're able to, when they play half a season. He's always been a guy who is a thinker, but now I guess he's been able to double down on that. So, look, you and I and many of the people that we regularly associate with are very, very fortunate. We've just had to adjust. You really feel for the people who are trying to survive. So whatever adjustments we've had to make, we've made them, and we're lucky to be able to say so.
Extremely well said, Bob. Bob Costas is joining us. You know, Bob, I could and should follow you and talk baseball right there, and if we have time, I'll double back to it. But I do want to ask you, you were interviewed as part of The Last Dance. What's it like looking back on that time for you?
Well, it was a wonderful time, not just for the Bulls and Michael Jordan. It was a tremendous era in the NBA, which is not to say that the recent Golden State Warriors or the Cavaliers when they had LeBron or everything that Popovich and the Spurs accomplished wasn't great, but there was something about that era where Bird and Magic fed into Michael Jordan's run, and you have to give Isaiah and the Pistons a nod for what they did in between. Kareem was just retiring toward the end of the 80s. The Lakers and Celtics had that wonderful rivalry. You got the Dream Team thrown in. And I've said this in other places, and people can factor in my bias. I really think it mattered in terms of making Michael Jordan and the Bulls, but also the NBA itself, part of the pop culture conversation in a way that maybe it isn't now. It mattered that the biggest games were on NBC, on an over-the-air broadcast network, before the media landscape became as crowded as it is now. Those games, those big games, were on NBC, and the promos were on Seinfeld and ER and Friends and David Letterman and the Today Show, and that made it part of the pop culture conversation. There was a second Dream Team. It didn't have the impact of the first, but a second Dream Team in 96 at the Atlanta Olympics. So, look, it's nothing against the presentation of the games now. Ernie Johnson's show with Barkley, Shaq, and Kenny Smith is probably the best studio show in the history of American sports TV. It isn't about the quality. Mike Green is a wonderful Hall of Fame announcer. But the NBA on NBC had a kind of prominence and a kind of resonance. We would show double and triple headers on a Saturday and Sunday on a weekend. There were playoff games, not just finals games. playoff game in prime time on weeknights, that meant that just about everybody who cared about it was in on it. And that game six, the last dance final game, is still by far the highest rated game in NBA history. And even though the way it ended, you couldn't ask for a more dramatic scenario, just think for a moment if there had been a game seven, and they came very close to having a game seven. A game seven on a Wednesday night on NBC in 1998, a larger rating still.
Bob Costas is joining us. All right, Bob, so what about that? Game six of the 98 finals has the highest TV ratings in NBA history. As popular as Kobe and LeBron have been, they have not broken that number. So in your mind, is it still possible to have an athlete and a team transcend sports the way Jordan and those Bulls did? Will we ever see anything like that again?
First of all, you have to have someone that great, that appealing. He's as handsome as a movie star. He was beautiful to watch. You have to have the constellation of stars around him. You know, it was a perfect storm. I just told you about the television component, the dream team component, the rivalries that were part of it. I don't want to call them secondary, but I guess I just did. But when you think of the other players who were gigantic stars, just think of the roster of the dream team, apart from Jordan and Pippen, who were the two Bulls on the team. It all just comes together. If you were casting a movie, and I guess The Last Dance in a way was a movie, if you were casting a movie, I don't know how you could possibly do better. Even on the Bulls, apart from Jordan himself, Pippen's a fascinating guy. So is Rodman. Jackson, obviously, is a very interesting guy. Steve Kerr, one of the most thoughtful and well-spoken athletes and bit players or role players, not bit players, role players like Steve Kerr and John Paxson are part of the story. It's a rich story. It's not just some two-dimensional story. It's got a lot of texture to it.
Bob, what did you make of the image of Michael Jordan as a person that we saw depicted in that series?
Well, I think it humanized him a bit. I didn't like the way he picked on Jerry Krause. Look, there's legitimate criticism of Jerry Krause. I think it was Phil Jackson who said he deserved more credit than he got, but he wanted more credit than he deserved. And it was just insane to say, look, if you go 82-0, this is still your last year. And that ridiculous conceit, organizations win championships, not players. Well, of course, the whole organization matters. But without the key players, it doesn't matter what kind of genius you fancy yourself to be, you're not going to win. So, okay, Krause may have deserved some criticism, but that kind of cool kids versus the awkward kids thing that played out and you heard some of it, I didn't think that reflected well on Michael. But none of us are perfect. And I thought a lot of what came out, his passion, his commitment to it, his obvious thoughtfulness in, and what I mean by that is not kindness. I mean the thoughtful way in which he answered the questions. This is not a one or two dimensional person, and I think that came out. The influence of his father, his fondness for his mom. I think it added some texture to his story and increased people's appreciation of him, especially as a player. If they'd either forgotten or they were too young to have experienced it firsthand, their appreciation of him as a player, but also I think it filled him out a little bit, not fully, but it filled him out a little bit as a person.
Bob Costas is joining us for a few more moments. Bob, it was not my intention to bring you on to talk exclusively about Michael Jordan, but you know baseball as well as anybody knows baseball, so I am curious about this. What do you make of Jordan's baseball career?
I think it's possible that had he committed to baseball, he wouldn't have been nearly as good a baseball player as he was a basketball player, and the country would have been deprived of one of its epic sports stories. But it's possible that he could have made the major leagues if he'd committed to baseball at the outset, you know, after he got out of high school. I know that Terry Francona and others in The Last Dance said that if he had stuck with Birmingham and made his way through the minor leagues, that he might have been able to make it to the majors. I think that's more they're expressing their respect for his work ethic. And it is kind of amazing that a guy that never played professional baseball and hadn't played baseball at all in a very long time was able to hit over 200 in the minor leagues. And he was a good base runner. He had a good arm in right field. The fact that he wasn't a joke, the focus on him made some people mock his baseball efforts. But the idea that somebody in their 30s could just leave their primary sport, try another, and not be terrible at it is kind of amazing. even at the double-A level. Do I think he would have made the major leagues had he stayed, had he not come back to the Bulls? No, I doubt it. But I think it was amazing that he was as good as he was.
We're talking to Bob Costas. So, Bob, in terms of the baseball season starting up, there's a number of things that are being discussed, obviously, right now. But should this happen, what would it be like to have a baseball season without fans, both for you as a fan and as a broadcaster?
Well, from the broadcasting standpoint, whether it's done from an essentially empty stadium or whether it's done in a studio, it isn't just the absence of the crowd in big moments, the cheering, the booing. There's a hum, a little buzz, a murmur of sound throughout a baseball game. And, of course, a baseball game is different from a basketball, hockey, or football game in terms of how it plays out and the way the crowd sort of fills in some of the spaces. And as a broadcaster, we'd have to be mindful of that. 4 or 5 seconds where the announcer doesn't say anything, and you have the pictures, but also you have the crowd sound, that sounds the way it should. 4 or 5 seconds without anyone saying anything and no crowd sound at all might seem strange. And we don't have any blueprint for this, so we're going to have to feel it as we go. I really don't know what to make of it, but we'll figure it out, I guess.
And then finally, one of the models that has been discussed has been expanding the roster, making the DH available in both leagues. Do you think there might be an opportunity for baseball to experiment and push the envelope a little bit this year in terms of tweaks to the game and how it's played? Might we see that, and might there be an opportunity there?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, Romy. I think that now is the time. Even if some of the things that have been floated out there are things that I don't agree with, now is the time to try virtually everything other than running the bases backwards. Expand the playoffs, have a different playoff format. If they wanted to put in a pitch clock with nobody on base, the Players Association opposes it, so they probably won't be able to pull it off. But I think this would have been a good time to experiment with that. I think it makes absolute sense to have the DH in both leagues, even though some of us favor the strategy that having the pitcher bat brings to the National League. They're going to be very concerned about injuries. They already were concerned in a normal season about injuries to American League pitchers who ordinarily don't bat, ordinarily don't run the bases. There's no point in taking any risk in that situation. I don't think you're going to see rosters once we return to normal and they're playing regular seasons. I don't think you're going to see rosters expanded to the extent that we'll see now. But it makes sense now because you just kind of need that sort of taxi squad in these unusual circumstances. But whatever they want to experiment with, if they want to experiment with putting a guy on second base and extra innings to move things along, I think that's a horrible idea. But now's the time to try it and then, you know, throw everything against the wall and see what sticks.
He is an MLB Network host, a play-by-play announcer, the recipient of 28 Emmy Awards, the recipient of the Ford C. Frick Award for Major Contributions to Baseball. He has also hosted 11 Olympic Games in primetime. Bob, I know there are obviously much more pressing matters, but I would be lying if I said that I was not looking forward to our first Javier's run, which I don't know if you had thought about, but I had already scheduled for earlier this year. So maybe we can rain check that. I was certainly looking forward to that.
You know, we are not that far apart, but we might as well be a world apart with social distancing. We could hop in our respective cars right now and meet at Javier's or Mastro's or Moto Mio. But there wouldn't be anybody there. Well, there might be for takeout, but it wouldn't be what you have in mind.
Yeah, Bob, I agree with you. I don't know about you, but I was driving around this weekend down by the beach communities, and there certainly were people in restaurants, and some were social distancing, and some were not. There were people at the beach, some were social distancing, and some were not. So leave us with this thought. Are you still staying indoors? Are you getting out? How are you approaching it at this point?
Well, luckily, we spend some time, as you know, that's what you were alluding to. We spend some time between the first of the year and the start of the baseball season, ordinarily, in California. And so we happened to be here when COVID-19 reached critical mass, so we didn't have to think about where we'd be. This is the best place to be, both because of the weather and because we are, to answer your question, able to get out. So we take long walks around the neighborhood, hang around in the backyard. That's probably a healthier situation than being in an apartment in New York, all things considered. But other than people we see on the walks, and instinctively, whether we know them or not, they veer one way and we veer another. It's just kind of understood by everybody, and then you wave at them from a distance. Apart from that, I haven't seen too many people in person over the last 2.5 months.
Exactly how we've done it. Exactly the same way. Bob Costas, my guest. Bob, I appreciate you so much. Great to have you on the show, and I always look forward to it. Thank you very much, Bob.
All right, Romy. Be well. See ya.
Be well. Stay safe. Great to have you, Bob. Bob Costas is the preeminent sports broadcaster of our time.